Welcome back to the Deep Dive, listeners. Today, we're ditching the scuba gear, but diving into something even more revealing, I'd say.
Ooh, intriguing. Tell me more.
We're cracking open the yearbooks. Yeah, high school yearbooks, to be precise.
That's a time capsule I haven't opened in a while.
Well, get ready for a blast from the past, because we're using these yearbooks to trace a hidden history of rebellion right here in America.
Rebellion? You got my attention. I'm guessing those poodle skirts and Letterman jackets have some stories to tell.
They sure do. We're talking millions of photos spanning from the 1930s all the way to the 2010s. And what's really fascinating is how these snapshots of style, the way kids chose to present themselves, reveal these like seismic shifts in our values as a society.
It's like fashion becomes this secret language, a way to communicate who you are and what you believe in, even if you don't realize you're doing it.
Exactly. And the researchers behind this study, they didn't just stop at the surface level. They dug deep, analyzing the trends in these photos to understand how even the smallest style choices, like a certain type of collar or the way you're wearing your hair, can reflect these much larger cultural transformations.
It makes you wonder, what were those kids trying to say? What did those seemingly small acts of rebellion actually mean in the context of their time?
That's what we're here to find out. So, to kick things off, let's rewind the clock back to the 1950s. You know, that iconic era of like Brill Cream and neatly knotted tie.
Oh, yes. The uniformity of it all.
Yep.
Rows upon rows of nearly identical young men in their suits and hats.
I know, right? You look at those yearbooks and it's like, how did anyone stand out? Imagine trying to find your date in that sea of conformity.
You need a really good memory for faces, that's for sure. But it's important to remember that homogeneity wasn't accidental. It was a product of its time, reflecting the era's emphasis on, you know, respect for authority, adherence to tradition.
Right. Like, don't even think about stepping out of line or your saddle shoes will be revoked.
Exactly. Clothing became this subtle but powerful tool for maintaining social order.
It's true. But then, hold on to your hats, folks, because here come the 1960s and things are about to get a whole lot more interesting. What happens when you introduce, well, counterculture into the mix?
It's like someone cranked up the volume and injected a whole lot of color into that sea of gray. We're talking long hair, open collars, facial hair. These weren't just fashion choices. They were proclamations, weren't they?
Totally. It's like they're saying, we're here, we're individuals, and we're not going to be put in the box. And what's really cool is that it wasn't just a uniform shift to a new type of cool, you know?
Right. It wasn't just about trading in your suit for a leather jacket and calling it a day.
Exactly. Individualism within those schools just explodes.
Yeah.
You start to see all these unique expressions, these personal styles bubbling up. Did that surprise the researchers, that sudden shift?
Absolutely. They actually quantify this, you see. They use something called a persistence score.
A persistence score? What's that all about?
So in this case, persistence measures how closely a student's style mirrors their parents' generation.
Ah, I get it. Like, how much are they clinging to tradition versus forging their own path?
Precisely. And in the late 60s, that persistence score just takes a nosedive. This indicates a real break from tradition, a rejection of the status quo.
Which makes total sense, considering what's happening in the world outside those school walls. I mean, you've got the civil rights movement, Vietnam War protests. It's a time of questioning authority, challenging the norm. And those ideas are definitely trickling down to the high school hallways.
Absolutely. And it wasn't just confined to the classroom. This was a cultural revolution that touched every aspect of life. And fashion became a powerful tool for expressing those changing values.
But hold on a second. We've been talking a lot about the guys and their rebellious haircuts. What about the women? Were they stuck in poodle skirts and saddle shoes this whole time?
That's where things get even more interesting. You see, while men were expected to adhere to a stricter dress code, women in the 1950s actually enjoyed a surprising degree of diversity in their style choices.
Now, that's a plot twist. I totally would assume the opposite. Tell me more.
Well, think about it. We have iconic figures like Jackie Kennedy, right? She was the epitome of elegance, grace. But at the same time, you had cat-eye glasses, shorter hemlines, and bolder patterns emerging as well. The data reflects this spectrum, this freedom that women had within those boundaries.
So while guys were stuck in a conformity rut, women were already exploring their individuality through fashion.
In a way, yes. But as men embraced individualism in the following decades, a fascinating trend emerges. Women's style actually becomes more uniform. It's a curious convergence, wouldn't you say?
Wow. That is unexpected. It really makes you wonder about those shifting dynamics between men's and women's roles in society during that time. What could be driving that trend? What happened? Well, we're going to have to unpack that intriguing twist right after a quick break. Stay with us. All right, so we're back, and before the break, we were talking about this style convergence, men embracing individuality, while women's fashion became more uniform.
Right. It's a curious trend.
It really is, and it makes you think about all those social changes happening beneath the surface, you know?
Absolutely, like the rise of feminism, for instance.
Yeah. As more women entered the workforce, maybe their clothing choices started to reflect that shift.
It's definitely a possibility, right? We see this movement towards pantsuits, power dressing a certain image of the working woman.
Makes sense to me. But you're saying it's not that simple.
Not quite. It's more nuanced than just one gender adopting the other style, I'd say.
So it's less about masculine versus feminine and more about those bigger cultural shifts happening at the time.
Precisely. We're talking about the reshaping of cultural values, a move away from those traditional gender roles, and a desire for both men and women to express themselves more authentically.
And what better way to do that than through fashion? It's like finding a new language to speak.
That's a great way to put it. And speaking of new languages, this era also saw the rise of what the researchers call style innovators.
Style innovators? Those sound like my kind of people.
Oh, they're definitely trendsetters.
Yeah.
These are the individuals who rocked up in their yearbooks with looks that defied convention. They weren't afraid to stand out to push the boundaries a bit.
Oh, I love those people. The ones who look like they just stepped out of a time capsule from the future. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Everyone else is like, where did they get those shoes?
Precisely. And here's where things get really interesting. The study found a fascinating link between those style innovators and, wait for it, patenting.
Hold on. Are you serious? Are you saying that the kids who dared to be different with their clothes were more likely to become inventors later in life?
The data suggests a strong correlation.
Yes.
Now, it's important to remember, correlation doesn't equal causation.
Right, right.
But the connection is still pretty remarkable. Students from communities with a high concentration of style innovation were also more likely to file patents as adults.
Okay, that's pretty mind-blowing. So it's not about a specific outfit magically making you more inventive.
Exactly. It's about a mindset.
A willingness to think differently, to challenge the norm, to see possibilities where others might not.
Exactly. It seems that environments that tolerate and even celebrate being different through personal style might foster that same out-of-the-box thinking that leads to innovation in other areas. It's a cultural connection.
That's fascinating. So that kid in your class who always dared to wear mismatched socks, they might actually be onto something.
Maybe so. But let's zoom out a bit. We've been talking about these national trends, but did this style revolution play out the same way across the entire country?
That's a great question. I mean, America's a pretty diverse place.
That it is. And when the researchers mapped these style trends geographically, what they found was a fascinating divide.
A divide? Like what kind of divide?
A stylistic one. It's like you have these two Americas, each with its own distinct fashion sense.
Okay, so paint me a picture here. We've got our high school in, say, New York City, a melting pot of cultures and styles, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got our high school in a small town, maybe somewhere in the Midwest, where things move a little slower, a little more traditional.
You've got it. And it's not just about clothing either.
It's about a whole way of life.
Exactly. This geographical style divide reflects deeper social and political currents as well.
So those seemingly simple style choices in yearbook photos aren't just about hemlines and hairstyles.
Not at all. They hint at something much bigger, a nation grappling with change, with tradition, with the very idea of who gets to be different and how those differences are expressed.
It's like we're seeing those tensions play out right there on the pages of these yearbooks.
And what's even more interesting is that this polarization doesn't happen overnight. It unfolds gradually over time.
Like a slow motion cultural earthquake.
A very stylish earthquake.
Exactly. But we're gonna have to wait till after the break to feel those aftershocks. Stay tuned. And we're back. Picking up right where we left off with this fascinating style divide in America. It's like you can practically see the Mason-Dixon line drawn in bell bottoms and penny loafers.
It's a powerful image, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's not about saying one side is right or wrong, but it's about understanding how those fashion choices reflect some pretty deep tensions, right? Like these huge changes happening in society.
Absolutely. And one thing that really surprised me was that this cultural divide, it didn't just appear out of nowhere. It's been brewing for decades, hasn't it?
It has. Remember that persistence score we talked about?
The one that measures how closely a student's style mirrors their parents' generation.
That's the one. Well, after bottoming out in the 1970s, it actually starts to climb back up again. Not a complete return to, say, the conformity of the 50s, but still a pretty interesting pattern.
It's like a pendulum, swinging back and forth between, like, embracing individuality and then clinging to tradition. What do you think drives that back and forth?
That's a great question. And this is where things get even more interesting, I think, because those social and economic forces we've been talking about, they actually play a huge role. For example, the study found this really unexpected connection between those style choices and economic factors.
Okay, now you've got my attention, because I would assume that the wealthier communities, you know, the ones with access to the latest fashions, would be leading the charge when it came to style innovation.
Right, it seems logical. But that's not actually what the data shows. In fact, the researchers found that areas with lower median incomes often showed higher levels of individualism and style innovation in their yearbooks.
Wow, really? So you're telling me that these communities, often facing economic hardship, they were more likely to be the trendsetters. That's pretty amazing.
It really is. It speaks to the resilience, that creativity that emerges when you have to work with what you've got, you know?
It's like they're saying, we might not have the same resources, but we can still express ourselves, make our voices heard through our style.
Exactly. And it's a good reminder that real innovation, self-expression, they can blossom in the most unexpected places.
So as we wrap up our deep dive into the visual history of rebellion, what's the main thing you want our listeners to take away from all of this?
I think the biggest takeaway is that style, it's never just about the clothes we wear, right? It's a window into our values, our dreams, even our struggles. It's a way we communicate with the world around us, whether we're conscious of it or not.
And as we've seen, that communication can be incredibly powerful because these yearbook photos weren't just showing us changing fashion trends. They were reflecting these massive social shifts, even economic disparities. We saw the seeds of innovation right there on those pages.
Exactly. Every single detail, every cufflink, every collar tells a story.
So the next time you see a yearbook photo, don't just see the clothes. See a snapshot of a moment in time, a whole cultural story frozen in that photo. And for our listeners, if you're interested in learning more about this fascinating research, we've got links to the study and some amazing visuals in our show notes. Thanks for joining us on this trip down memory lane. Until next time, keep your eyes open and your minds curious.